How will sending the kids back to school work in a time of pandemic? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation and your questions answered as we welcome Duval County Superintendent Dr. Diana Green. Give us a call now, 549-2937. Then later, how you can be part of StoryCorps' new project, trying to bring a divided country together. It's called One Small Step. We'll tell you about it. But first, the latest on the COVID crisis statewide. We have more than 152,000 cases and just over 3,500 deaths. Northeast Florida is continuing to rack up cases, edging toward 8,500, but we are still at 116 deaths in our community. Meantime, students in the area are enjoying their summer break, including my own, but they'll be heading back to class in August, and plans are in place for how to do this safely. Parents have so many questions. So do students and teachers. How will coronavirus be managed in our schools? Well, Dr. Diana Green has put a lot of effort into the back-to-school plan for Duval County. She is Duval School Superintendent, and she's on the line now to tell us more. Dr. Green, good to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having me, Melissa.
And what are your questions for Duval County Superintendent Dr. Diana Green? It's 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, Dr. Green, the district put out its plan on your website a little over a week ago. Since then, Jacksonville has instituted a citywide, countywide mask order for all buildings. Now, you had not planned to make everybody mask up in schools. Is that changing now that the mayor has ordered masks?
Well, first I want to say that all students were going to need facial coverings because either they were transitioning or riding a school bus. They needed to have a facial covering. With the order, now that will be that all students will need, again, to have a facial covering. They'll need to wear it more often based on the order if it is still in place when we return to school.
Okay. And of course, that could change. We are several weeks out. And going beyond the mask mandate, Superintendent Green, what you've tried to do with this plan is put together a hybrid learning schedule for students. The younger students will be in class more days, high school students just 2 days a week. Is that still the plan going forward?
Currently, that's what the plan is. As you can see, each day we get new information, and we have to be flexible or nimble enough to transition. We will have the ability, if we have to do 100% Duval homeroom, we have the capability. If we are moving to more days in school, we have that capability as well. I think the important thing that families need to remember, this is for just reopening. Our goal is to evaluate this situation every month, and at the end of the 9 weeks, if we are in a better situation and the impact has been minimal, then we will transition to students being in school more days.
Yeah. The American Academy of Pediatrics has put out its guidance on this. They're strongly in favor of bringing kids back to the classroom this fall, wherever that can be done safely. This is difficult for educators, isn't it? Balancing the need to get kids back to their normal routines with public health concerns. I know this hasn't been an easy task for anyone in your shoes. What's your response to the conflicting demands you're seeing? Some parents really want to continue online learning. Others are just desperate to get their kids out of the home learning environment. And I have to say that includes our household, where our two just didn't do well with it at all. They just need that structure of school to stay focused. This has been a challenging nut to crack, hasn't it?
It definitely has been very challenging. We have to balance the needs of our families along with the needs of our employees. This virus may not impact children as much, but children go home to parents, grandparents, our employees. A majority of our teachers are over the age of 50, so we have to ensure that our employees, when they come back into the building, that they feel we've done everything to make it safer for them. If teachers are going out because of the virus, that just puts the school at another disadvantage. Things that people probably are not thinking about is that once someone is considered a positive COVID-19, the contact tracing, the requirement of self-isolation, there will be times that we might have to have a classroom self-isolate at home and be on Duval homeroom, or a school will have to close because of the possibility of the number of cases at that school. Our goal is to try to minimize that as much mm-hmm. as possible.
Any concerns as well about the news that Governor Ron DeSantis has zeroed out funding to an online learning program that is vital for this kind of virtual learning that we're living in now in the time of COVID?
Well, we are very fortunate with Duval Homeroom. It was definitely a experiment. We turned it around in 3 days, but over time, the Duval Homeroom won't quite look like it did when students left at spring break. We've had more opportunity to hone in on skills to ensure that teachers can engage with students on the days that those students who have a hybrid schedule, that we are training other individuals to also be available for Duval Homeroom. And so the state, because the state is investing on online, it tells us that we need to be prepared. And if we have to switch to online, we need to be able to do it quickly and support our students and their families.
Dr. Green, what are your thoughts as well about Jacksonville hosting the Republican National Convention at Vistar Arena just a few weeks after all the kids in this county go back to school? Are you worried at all that could further spread COVID through the city as we are getting back to school, more kids in class, more cars out on the roads, more activity around town?
Well, I will always be concerned. I tell everyone on staff that the first day of school, I don't know when the next day I'll get sleep, because every day I'll be concerned. Because our students, they leave us. They go home. They go shopping. They go other places. So the fact that thousands of people will be coming to our city, our goal is that for at least 6 hours a day, they're in a location with their teachers and the students that they have been going to school with each day, and we provide a safer environment for them. But when they leave our doors, it will be imperative for our families to continue doing those precautions, such as frequently hand washing. When you're out and can't be 6 feet apart, wear facial covering. If you have symptoms, don't go out. Don't send them to school. So those will be the important things that will help us minimize the spread of COVID-19.
Let's go to some calls now for Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Diana Green. 549-2937. What are your questions about back to school, how this will be managed as coronavirus continues to spike throughout Florida? Charles on the west side. Hi, Charles.
Hi, good morning. Dr. Green, I'm a big fan of yours, I must say, after all the sagas of interchangeable superintendents that have preceded you. But my question for you is there the Wi-Fi structure necessary? Is it available for the students like in Northwest Jacksonville and Arlington for the kids that need to do the learning from home? And also, I'm old enough to remember, I went to do all county schools when we had split sessions back in the mid-70s because just the sheer amount of students. But my ultimate question for you is, are you going to have money in the budget from the state for the, what I see is, I think there's going to be an increased need for counseling for the students eventually. And I've read so much about, you know, positions being cut. Are you going to have enough counselors to help the kids for their mental health?
And yeah, two great questions from you, Charles. Thank you so much.
Instead of relying on the resource officers, you know.
Right. Okay, Dr. Green, two big imperatives, Wi-Fi so that children learning at home can connect, and also the psychological impact of all of this on the children and the teachers, too.
Absolutely. We are very fortunate to have an outstanding IT department. We were able to supply over 3,000 hotspots for students who had challenges with Wi-Fi. We also had partnerships with Comcast in supporting families with Wi-Fi. We felt like we were able to meet the needs of our students. If we found out any student wasn't logging on and it was because of hardware or Wi-Fi, we intervened. We gave out over 40,000 laptops for students to be able to access our online platform. As far as mental health, we shared with our school board at our last workshop that we have a three-tiered approach to support our students with mental health as well as our employees. As I said, this is going to be very challenging, balancing the needs of families and the needs of our employees. And the goal is to put a plan that we're addressing the issue of being safer at their workplace, safer in their classrooms, and understanding that we will still have to work through challenges as we begin the school year, and the goal is to move towards all students being in school.
James in Mandarin. Hi, James. What's your question?
Hey, good morning, Dr. Green. I'm curious, beyond the normal teachers and staff and students that attend a school, there's often a variety of visitors and vendors and volunteers, and I'm just curious to hear, excuse me, what thoughts are in place for those visitors this upcoming year, if they'll be allowed in the schools with precautions like masks, or if they won't be allowed past the front desk. Just kind of curious to hear what the thoughts have been there.
That's a good question. We should note, by the way, the school board did just approve plexiglass barriers in schools. That's another way they're working on tamping down spread of the virus. Dr. Green, will schools be closed to visitors?
We will have a process in place and limit visitors to the school. Of course, parents, if they're needing to come to the school and pick up their child, we already have that process in place. But in the beginning of the school year, we will limit visitors. According to the CDC guidelines, we still should not have large-scale events. And I kind of chuckle at that because just attending high school is a large-scale event. You know, most of our high schools are over 1,000 students, and our largest high school, Sandalwood, up to 3,000 students. And part of our plan is reducing the number of students on campus. And if we're going to do that, then we also need to reduce the number of visitors on our campus.
Wendy in St. Augustine. Hi, Wendy.
Hi. I have two related questions. The kids that are not at school, who's going to be teaching them? And then the other was we weren't able to meet class sizes before across the board. So they're kind of related. Like, how are we going to meet this lower class size?
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also going to have kids at home. Where are we going to get the staff for all this?
All right. Dr. Green, it sounds as though it will be a continuation of what we experienced with home learning in the spring, but with the change being that more kids will be staggered on campus throughout the week. I'm simplifying it somewhat, but is that about the size of it?
That is correct. And our elementary students, that group of students will be on campus 5 days a week, unless parents choose to participate in full-time Duval homeroom if they're not comfortable sending their children to school. It is the older students, the secondary students, that we staggered the date that they are attending school during the week.
And here's a tweet for you when it comes to the high schoolers. And this is one, I try not to include my own family in these questions, but I will in this instance because this applies at my household too. Leanne tweets the show, how will they provide the structure needed for high schoolers with ADHD to succeed? March through May, my son's teachers only assigned work to be done independently and they were available for questions. Disastrous for ADHD kids. That was certainly the experience we had at home. And when I learned that our two were going to only be on campus 2 days a week in high school, I have to tell you, my heart sank. I understand why you're doing it, but I just know that they won't do well if they don't have the structure of the classroom. They didn't do very well working independently at home. So what are your thoughts about parents that have those concerns?
Well, as I shared earlier, Duval Homeroom will be structured a little differently for students who are staggering throughout the week. The goal is for more engagement with their teacher, more of a structured day on the days that they are not at school. There are some anomalies that students will attend more than 2 days for high school, but that's related to students who have additional services that are needed. Those students will attend more than 2 days a week at the high school level as well as the middle school level, depending on their grade level. We are really focused on if we can get in a place where we're not experiencing large cases or many cases on our campuses, then the goal is to continue to add more days for them to be at school.
And we should note that in St. John's County, Superintendent Tim Forson has released three possible scenarios there for returning to school. Either everyone goes back into the buildings if there's low to no spread. They may do what Dr. Green is doing and have some in the building, some learning virtually, or they may go with all virtual learning in St. John's. That has yet to be decided. It's 549-2937. Wendy on the line. Go ahead, Wendy.
Hi, I just had a question. Who will be teaching special needs kids at home? And then we didn't have the class size before. How are we going to, where are we going to get the staff from?
Okay, you called a minute ago. Staffing is the same as it was before, Dr. Green, correct?
Yes, we are continuing to use our same staffing formula. Our goal is to ensure that we're not laying any, I heard at the beginning, laying teachers off. Our goal is that we're not laying off any of our teachers.
And lots of emails and tweets for you, Dr. Green, far more than I will ever be able to get on the air. But let me get a few to you. Here's one from Jill. I'm the parent of an autistic student entering ninth grade at Atlantic Coast. He'll be in the inclusion program. I'm concerned about the amount of days he'll be home alone. My husband and I both work full time. I'm also concerned about his IEP, individual education plan, and the contact hours he gets from his teacher. That's similar to what I asked you about as well. The worry that kids left home to work independently, even the older kids, no matter what the parents do, if there's not an adult there guiding them through, physically in front of them, guiding them through learning, they just can't keep up. And I know that's an impossible question to manage as you try to manage public health first. But what about Jill's question?
Again, we will revamp, we've already revamped Duval Homeroom so that it is less just giving assignments and checking in with the teacher. It's more about actually seeing your teacher, even when you're at home and interacting with your classmates and your teacher through Do All Homeroom. There are instances where some students, based on that particular school and the needs of those students, may actually have some students come more than 2 days a week. Again, we have students who have OT, PT, other services that require them to be more effectively applied if they're done in person. And so we've made opportunities for schools to open their doors to ensure that some students who need that additional support can come to school.
All right. And here is a question for you from a teacher. He asks, do you anticipate you'll have to close any classrooms or schools once the year begins? Opening up only to shut down again if we see widespread of transmission of COVID. I know you touched on this a moment ago, but that is possible, isn't it?
It is possible. It's no different than any other entity that has employees and someone tests positive for COVID-19, and through the contact tracing, they've had prolonged engagement with other individuals at that location. They may not shut down that location, but those individuals have to self-isolate for a period of time. We will not be any different. We will have situations where we will have to contract trace, figure out who the individual's been in prolonged contact with, and may have to insist that those individuals self-isolate. But I do not envision opening up schools and closing down all schools. I do not envision that we will do this whole sweeping across the district. It really will be based on the Department of Health. We will follow their guidance. And again, if individuals are following all of the protocols, our goal is to minimize that happening in our schools.
Let me ask you as well about what you're hearing from the district's teachers. Nearly a third of teachers are over 50 across America. They are higher risk when it comes to the disease. Some of them may be reluctant to go back into the classroom. Here's an email from Diane. She asks, will faculty and staff get workers' comp if they contract COVID?
We are working on our policy as it relates to whether it's sick leave or taking leave. Again, because we have really rigid protocols in place, if everyone is following those protocols, we will follow our district policy. To determine whether it is workers' comp, at this point, I don't have that full answer because we're still working through what the federal government has put in place for leave, the new type of family medical leave. And so workers' comp has... that is our next phase to work in through all of the policies that could impact an individual or an employee.
So many questions still out there. And as you said, Dr. Green, this is a work in progress. Certainly things can change as the situation changes, and you will, I trust, be nimble and flexible. And parents need to stay attuned to any possible changes as the school year progresses, correct?
Absolutely. Our website will go live about the reopening for schools next week, and I encourage parents to at least check it once a week. We get new information every day, and every day is an opportunity for our plan that it needs to be tweaked, or okay, this has now happened. We need to add something to the plan that wasn't an issue in the beginning, but now it will become a priority for us.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. I know it's been quite a busy time for you, and it will only increase. She's Duval County School Superintendent Dr. Diana Green. Dr. Green, thanks.
Thank you.
And much more still ahead on the show later in the hour.
I think we at StoryCorps were increasingly concerned about the kind of crisis of contempt in this country, that we weren't seeing each other across the political divides as human beings.
We check in with StoryCorps founder Dave Isay on taking one small step to understanding those different from us. But up next, what Jacksonville's mask order means for your workplace. Back in a moment.
We all live in our own little silos, and we mostly talk to people that believe like we do.
I'm probably too opinionated also, but that's one of the reasons I wanted to come here today.
WJCT and StoryCorps are inviting you to have a conversation with someone from across the political divide. Sign up at wjct.org/OSS. StoryCorps' One Small Step is made possible in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Blues Horizon has a new gig. We've packed up our instruments and moved over to WJCT 89.9 HD3. The best in classic and modern blues has a new home. Tune in as we explore the vault and find unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, as part of the Jacksonville Music Experience. Every Sunday night at 8 on WJCT 89.9 HD3.
Welcome back. Well, Duval County's new mask order brings up a whole new set of questions, especially for the workplace, where many companies and employees alike were already struggling with efforts to navigate this new normal. Now, basically, what you need to know is whenever you're under a roof now anywhere in this city, you need to be masked up. That seems simple enough, but there are exceptions and there are quirks to this, and there are concerns about liability and potential claims. Attorney Tyler White is principal at the Jackson Lewis firm here in town, and he's on the line to answer your questions about the mask order. Good morning, Tyler.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
And give us a call as we talk about the mask mandate for Jacksonville and Duval County and your questions answered. It's 549-2937 to give us a call. This is a pretty much a blanket order, Tyler, isn't it, with a few exceptions? Are there any exceptions?
This is a blanket order. It requires mask wearing in public indoor spaces and locations where social distancing is not possible. They give examples like concerts and indoor sporting events, though I don't think there are many of those happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
As far as exceptions go, if a mask interferes with the business at the establishment, then the customer does not have to wear the mask. This includes eating at a restaurant or obviously when you have to open your mouth for your dentist.
Okay.
The other exception is if a customer, for example, says that they have an ADA disability that prevents them from wearing a mask. Now, I think importantly, though, the order itself does say that the owner, manager, or employee of the business establishment may still exclude that individual from the business, even though they have that disability, because they could pose a direct threat to the health and safety of employees and other customers, even if those employees and other customers are asymptomatic. And basically, I think the idea is, if you look at the order, is that the business should try to accommodate that customer with the disability that prevents them from wearing a mask by perhaps asking them, can I go get what you need from my business, for example? Can I provide you with curbside service? And so I think there's going to need to be a little flexibility in that regard. And certainly that's going to upset some people who want to go into the business but do not want to wear a mask. But that's where we are.
That's where we are. The most common question we've gotten about this is how the mask order will be enforced, Tyler. What will be the consequences if customers or employees refuse to comply, refuse to wear a mask? What can we expect?
Right now, it's just warning. The city says it's basically counting on Jacksonville residents to do the right thing. The mandate, of course, allows businesses to refuse service to those who don't comply. Again, right now, from the city's perspective, there's not been a lot of guidance on that. They said they're going to issue warnings, not fines for now. However, that could change. I think Jacksonville City Councilman Roy Diamond tweeted that as much, which is about what we've learned so far. But I think what's going to happen is if it doesn't appear to be being enforced and there are enough complaints to the city, they will probably start looking at what type of fines might be implemented and issue another order.
How does that compare, do you know, with other parts around Florida, around the nation, how they've handled that issue of enforcement?
I don't know. I mean, I'm typically wrapped up right now with advising the local businesses that call me on this. So I think this is one of the interesting parts about having sort of all this sort of mishmash of local, state, and then federal orders. It can create a little bit of confusion.
Yeah, sure. But as you said, you're focused on the workplace. Let's talk about what this means for office settings around town. What problems do you potentially foresee when it comes to this order? What should business owners and employees really be aware of right now?
Well, I think that employers need to take heed of the mask mandate. They cannot ignore it. I think certain of your employees are going to demand it. And when I say demand it, they're going to demand that others comply, because mask wearing is not for the health of the individual wearing the mask. Mask wearing is for the health of the others who come into contact with that person. And so when issues could arise, for example, in office settings, it could be when an employee complains that, hey, you know, Pam is not wearing her mask, John is not wearing his mask, that's putting me at risk, and what are you going to do about it as an employer? So from that perspective, employers cannot ignore those type of complaints from employees. We are seeing claims that are arising from COVID-related concerns, in addition to retaliation claims for employees who complain about what they consider to be an unsafe working environment. And I think, as an example, if an employer ignores the mask mandate or ignores complaints of their employees about other employees or customers being allowed in without wearing a mask, then the employee could make that claim that they are in an unsafe working environment, and they could cite to the mask mandate and say, my employer's not in compliance, and they don't care. And so that's really where the problems can start for employers.
We're speaking with Attorney Tyler White, principal at Jackson Lewis, about Duval County's new mask order. What are your questions, especially in the workplace? 549-2937. Sally is on the line from Jacksonville. Hi, Sally.
Hi, good morning. I'm just curious what types of health conditions would be, where a mask would be a reason to not wear a mask. Which health conditions would preclude that?
Okay. You know, Tyler, in recent days on social media, we've seen these viral videos of people throwing fits in stores, in grocery stores and other places where they're refused service because they're not masked up and they claim they have a health condition that means they can't wear a mask. That's largely been debunked, is my understanding. But what does the law say about this?
It doesn't. And I'm not a doctor, so I couldn't tell you what these people, and I've seen the videos, what these people are claiming prevents them from wearing a mask. But clearly the order was written maybe with those people in mind. I think, though, practically speaking, the business owner who receives such a complaint, as an example, from a customer that says, I can't wear a mask because I have a disability. the owner has no responsibility or obligation to ask that customer to prove it. The owner has no responsibility to even ask what the disability is. They have to take it for what it is. But importantly, they can say, I understand and I'm sorry, but you cannot come into our place of business.
Yeah, and just to be clear, there are people walking around with fake cards that they claim are from an official government agency that exempt them from wearing a mask. Those aren't real. There is no official government agency that will issue you such a card. And physicians say, even if you have asthma or some kind of pulmonary condition, you still need to wear a mask. It won't... there are ways to make yourself more comfortable when you wear it, and it will not endanger your health. So by and large, people that are making these claims, Tyler, they just don't want to, wear the mask, right? They just don't want to put on the mask.
That may very well be the case. Again, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know all the ins and outs of what they may be claiming. But again, I think to the extent someone, like in these videos, wants to pitch a fit about not being able to come in, it's not about them. It's about the spread that they could cause if they happen to have something. And so that's the reason why they can be excluded from the business.
Now that we're in this new reality with the mandate, which will last for however long it lasts, what are some of the other COVID-related employment issues that you're seeing?
Well, the biggest is a refusal to return to work as businesses open back up, and also a refusal to return to work after, for example, one of the employees, one of their fellow employees, contracts COVID and then goes home to quarantine for 14 days, and an employee says, well, I'm concerned. I don't want to come back to work right now. And then what does an employer do? Really, for private employers, the Occupational Safety and Health Act, the OSHA, it requires employers to provide its employees with a place of employment free from recognized hazards that are causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. Under OSHA, employees generally can't just walk off the job or refuse to work because of potential unsafe conditions at the workplace. The idea is that the employee should bring the hazardous conditions to the attention of the employer, which then has a responsibility to respond to that, to correct the potential violations or whatever the case may be. And then if that doesn't happen, the employee can request an inspection by OSHA. Now, the only instance where an employee may be entitled to refuse to work would be where the employee has a good faith belief that an imminent danger exists that's likely to result in serious injury or death. Now, what could that be? I think, again, this gets back to, that's why you have to comply with the mask mandate. One of the things that the employee could say in that instance is, I'm going to refuse to work because I have a good faith belief that an imminent danger exists in this instance because my employer simply is not requiring my fellow employees or customers to wear masks in compliance with Jacksonville's order.
Here is an email from a Publix worker. He doesn't want to give his name. He emailed us the other day, Tyler. He said, I emailed OSHA to ask when or if they plan on issuing mask guidance for essential workplaces like mine, essential or open to the public, since local government won't issue an order and corporate won't until they're mandated by a higher government body. He goes on to say, as far as I know, the only punishment I've seen is for a business like Publix that doesn't care about unsafe working conditions unless it comes with an OSHA price tag. And OSHA has declined to weigh in. He said, I can walk around a back room and see upright pallets and know that it's $10,000 in fines per pallet. That might only bruise or break my foot, but it wouldn't kill me. It seems like finding a business is the only way to make them compliant. That's all been overridden now, though, as you say, Tyler, because of the governor's order, or excuse me, the mayor's order on masks.
Right. I mean, the mayor's order makes it very clear that in places like grocery stores in particular, masks need to be worn. And so that that's going to sort of override the OSHA's inspection policies, and they're going to say, okay, well, are you complying with local orders? That's going to be one of the first things that they'll look at.
This is a whole new ballgame for businesses and the general public. So it's been hard to adapt to this change, but it's simply a change we've all got to get used to. What's your final piece of advice for people who really, you know, they're having to adjust to getting a mask on every day when they go out the door?
You know, I talked to a doctor who explained it this way to me. If you don't wear a mask and you decide that that's what you're going to do, if you take that out to its furthest extent, if you're wrong, you could be potentially infecting others and causing injury and potentially death. And if you're right, then all you had to do was suffer the minor inconvenience of putting something over your face when you go out in public. And so when you weigh the two, and you've got an order from the mayor that now says you have to wear a mask in these environments, just put on a mask. It's very simple.
It is. And I want to thank you. He's Attorney Tyler White, principal at Jackson Lewis here in town. Thanks, Tyler.
Thanks, Melissa.
We need to know, we've been wearing face masks here at the WJCT studios for some time now. But now that masks are a must in both Duval and St. Augustine, we're going to share some favorite local sources for masks with all of you. As we celebrate what's good in this community, it's our What's Good Wednesdays. Let's begin with Bobby K Boutique. They have masks in a number of colors. They've got tie-dye, Jaguars prints. You can order them online and pick them up in his Springfield store on Main Street or have them shipped. Rethreaded has masks, and each mask you purchase from them helps provide employment for a survivor of human trafficking right here in Jacksonville. Local designer and stylist RG Mitra sells a number of chic, retro, and modern prints and solids on her Etsy page, and she's still donating one for each one she sells. She's donating gowns to community hospice, too. And last but not least, if you want to put a WJCT logo on your mask, we have them. You can get one right on our website with a donation. Mask up, everybody. Here's another What's Good. Shay and Charlotte Sabari, who own Farmer's Market favorite Olive My Pickle, were recently recognized as Beyond the Plate Local Food Heroes. This was done by our friends at Edible Northeast Florida. They nominated them. When COVID-19 stay-at-home orders led to the closure of farmers markets, the Sabaris opened 904 Food Hub, and it operated for 10 weeks. Congratulations to them. Remember to shop local and support small businesses like theirs. And get ready for Gelato July. Peterbrook Chocolatier is celebrating National Ice Cream Month by giving away a free scoop of gelato every Wednesday in July. That kicks off today. It's their 7th annual event, and there is nothing more delicious than supporting a hometown company that's made good. So mangia il gelato starting today. And if you want more good news delivered to your inbox each week, sign up for What's Good Wednesdays at WJCT.org. In a moment, how StoryCorps is getting Americans who see the world differently to take one small step toward understanding. That's next.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Radley Balco, author of Rise of the Warrior Cop. It's about what he describes as the militarization of America's police forces and the military culture within some police agencies. Balco writes about criminal justice and civil liberties for The Washington Post. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Marco Werman. Other nations look to the U.S. and see us struggling to manage COVID-19.
I get emails and text messages from all over the world just kind of shaking their head. What is happening? Why has the U.S. response been so ineffective?
Looking at the U.S. from beyond our borders, we put America's day in a global context. It's the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Americans might not be going out and buying new clothes like they used to, but the resale market is booming.
There are a lot of people who are home. They're looking for space in their house. They are seeing more than ever that they have clothing that they don't need or don't wear.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the online market for the stuff you don't want and somebody else's stuff that you do want. That's next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6 here on 89.9 WJCT.
It straddles the glitzy and commercial with a sense of community and a clear call to action. And it's called K-pop. How you like that? Around the world and more recently here in America, an army of fans are doing much more than trolling racists. We find out how K-pop is making a difference next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, right now we face our greatest challenge as Americans, how to rebuild our country in the wake of a global pandemic crisis. How do we rise to it? Whether you're liberal or conservative, we've all got a stake in this. This year, we want you to take one small step. In collaboration with the renowned national nonprofit StoryCorps, WJCT Public Media is inviting residents to have a conversation with someone else in town who you might not otherwise talk with, who you might even disagree with. We are one of only six stations across the U.S. chosen to lead this initiative in 2020. It's free, and you can join us from your own home. I learn more from StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. Dave Isay, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Melissa.
So how did One Small Step come to be?
Well, you know, StoryCorps has been around for quite a while now, for 17 years, and we've had about 600,000 people participate in these interviews where you sit with a loved one and ask him or her about his or her life, kind of collecting the wisdom of humanity, and each of those interviews goes to the Library of Congress. It worked perfectly well, but we decided to break it one small step and try something different. You know, I think we at StoryCorps were increasingly concerned about the kind of crisis of contempt in this country, that we weren't seeing each other across the political divides as human beings. We're increasingly kind of looking at each other as us and thems, and you know, a democracy can't survive in a swamp of mutual contempt. So we undid what had worked so well for StoryCorps, putting loved ones together, and created One Small Step, which is about putting strangers together across the divide in a StoryCorps booth just to get to know each other as human beings, not to argue about politics. Mother Teresa used to say, we've forgotten that we belong to each other.
Yeah.
And this is just a way to remind us that indeed we do.
WJCT is thrilled to partner with you in this. Curious why we were chosen.
You know, JCT, as your listeners know, has deep roots in the Jacksonville community and deep community partnerships. And that's really what this is about. It's about reaching all people and having the ability to not only reach the listening audience, but reach beyond. And I think we saw that the trust that JCT listeners have and the relationship JCT has with its listeners was the kind of dynamic that we were looking for to try this, you know, very difficult project. And we have no illusions about how hard this is. You know, Jacksonville is, you know, a swing city and a swing state. The convention's going to happen there, or at least President Trump's acceptance speech. But we did some polling and we felt that Jacksonville was a place where we might be able to pull this off. And we hope that folks will join us and, you know, kind of take a stab at taking the temperature down, taking one small step back from the cliff that we're kind of heading towards.
The idea is to really get people in a booth talking or doing it virtually in this time of COVID that
right.
don't see eye to eye. You've put some compelling duos together, a Trump supporting MAGA sign holding person with a woman wearing a hijab who really doesn't like the Trump administration. Those are the kinds of pairings you're doing, right?
I noticed you with the hat.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that you were surrounded by some people, and I noticed that they were being kind of threatening, and then somebody snatched your hat off your head. And that's the point where something kind of snapped inside me, because I wear a Muslim hijab, and I've been in situations where people have tried to snatch it off my head.
Wow.
and I rushed towards you, and I just started screaming, leave him alone, give me that back.
I don't think we could be any further apart as people, and yet it was just kind of like this common, that's not okay moment.
This woman in Austin who was wearing a hijab came to the rescue of a Trump supporter who was wearing a MAGA hat and had it ripped off, and they got to know each other and became friends, and she talked about how she understood the, you know, what it's like to be abused for a head covering, and it's a very kind of moving relationship that they developed. Most of the interviews aren't that dramatic. It's just two people who, again, might not otherwise get the chance to talk to each other, getting to know each other as human beings. We'll take some information from you, and you'll write a little bio, and we'll match you with someone who's different than you, and the person who you're matched with will see your bio, but not your name. And now, because we're in a moment of social distancing, another change for StoryCorps, instead of meeting face-to-face, you'll have this conversation virtually and choose questions you want to talk about together. But again, most people don't talk about politics. It's really just talking about who you are and what you've learned in life and how you want to be remembered. And, you know, each interview goes to the Library of Congress, so people are aware their great-great-great-grandchildren will get to know them through this interview. So it's a way to hopefully begin to knit the country together again, one story at a time.
Yeah, taking one small step just by clicking onto our website. As Dave said, go to wjct.org/OSS and be part of one small step. WJCT Public Media is one of only six stations across the U.S. chosen to lead on this initiative this year. It's free. So check it out and be part of the conversation. We're thrilled to be presenting this in Jacksonville. And I want to thank you, Dave Isay, StoryCorps founder, for letting us know all about it and for envisioning this. It's difficult, as you said, to have these conversations, but important to do that. So thank you, Dave, so much for being with us.
Melissa, it's my pleasure. And thanks to all the listeners of JCT for being a part of this.
Again, you can sign up for One Small Step, and you can participate from your own home. Just go to wjct.org/OSS. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Jessica Palumbo is our station news director, and our digital editor is Bill Bortsfield. If you missed any part of today's show, catch the rebroadcast tonight at 8 or our podcast up online later today. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow and connect with you then. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.